We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the More NBA podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, coming at you Thursday evening. It's April 25th, and while we do have another day off here before game three, we did have some Wolves related news on Wednesday evening when it was announced that Naz Reid won sixth man of the year. I have Wolves beat writer from the Star Tribune, Chris Hine, here with me. And while we both weren't at the Naz Reid press conference this morning, we are going to dig in to Naz winning the award for today's show. Chris, welcome to Phoenix. How are you?
I'm good. And just so people know, Jane and I did not move into the same apartment complex as each other. He is literally down the hall from me at the same hotel here in Phoenix. We're not in the same hotel room or two parts of a suite or something like that.
You should have.
But yes, I gave Dan a little travel tip to have him book this.
Yes,
you did. Near the arena in Phoenix. So
yes, Chris is my travel muse. What do I do, Chris? And help me out. So we are both here in Phoenix, and we're going to dig into Naz today. Just a reminder that today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, and Prize Picks does have the full slate of picks up there for Wolves Suns game three for you to make your daily fantasy lineup. My pick of the day for that game is Jaden McDaniels more than 10.5 points in game three. Obviously, that's a reaction to in part to Jaden having 25 in game two. But I think it's important to think about how he got that. It was so much of it was the offensive rebounds, offensive glass. 10.5 is what Jaden's number has kind of been at the entirety of the season. And the entire season, he was not getting offensive rebounds. I think that's just if he does get offensive rebounds, he's going to score double digits. So I think that's over a 50-50 proposition. So throw that in your lineup at PrizePicks.com or on the PrizePicks app and use promo code Dane for a $100 sign-up bonus. All right, Chris. Kind of cool. You've been the beat writer for Naz's entirety of his career. You've written many stories on him. I was putting together an outline. I'm like, I wonder how many times Chris has typed out the two words Naz Reid. So you think about that? Yeah. So, me too.
Go back through all my Google Docs from the various years and do a
word search.
Find, yeah. How many times I've done that. Well, actually, if you think about it, I wouldn't have typed out the two words Naz Reid many times, because once you say his first name, it's just Reid every subsequent mention after that. So it might be not as many as you think.
I don't know. There's Twitter, though.
I've seen
you type out Naz Reid very many times in tweets. So I think you have an interesting perspective. An interesting perspective in general, on this pod of, you aren't from Minnesota. You didn't grow up here, Wolves, whatever. You've also covered different sports, different teams. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, I don't think we've ever really talked about this in particular. Have you had another experience of covering a player who was really a cult hero to a fan base? How unique is the Naz experience been for you?
I think that there's always fan bases always develop these what's the word I want, affections or whatever for mm-hmm. usually somebody on the team or in the organization towards the end of the bench. You know, you see it in college programs, like, you know, if a walk-on gets in the game or something right. like that, right? You know, stuff like that, right? So I think this is, in some ways, it's a little common. This is just on a whole other level, though, of just
yeah.
as the years have gone by, it's just become more intense. I mean, I feel like, you know, the corners of Wolves fandom were in on, you know, Leandro Balmaro in the same way that they were on Naz Reid. And it's just that, you know, Naz Reid took off and Balmaro never really did. Mm-hmm. So it's now it's just kind of become its own thing, and it's become huger than I think anybody could ever imagine. So this is just, in my career, very unique. I've been a sports writer now for 14, 15 years. And yeah, this is, I've never seen anything quite like this fan base's affection, almost seeming not out of nowhere, but like just the amount of it, and the things that people do to display it,
yeah,
is totally, totally unique. That's
yeah. And that's almost like, there's like two different ways I see it. There's like the, you know, when we're at the game and there's the Naz Reid signs and the towels and there's those dudes who dress up as the Wizard of Naz and mm-hmm. and all that. There's like, there's that part of like, okay, this thing's on fire. Like it mm-hmm. is, it is, if you are a Wolves fan, you're into this. I think like the origin of how it started is interesting too. And also like very, I've kind of talked about this before, but like very Timberwolves fan base where, I mean, there's been so many seasons over the last 20 years where, I mean, you get to the halfway point of the season and it's written, you know, like, you know what the season is. They're not going to the playoffs. You're not going anywhere. And so as to, if you are going to continue to choose to watch Wolves games, right, go to Wolves games, you almost like need to have something else right. other than the top line guys, you know, whether that was, you know, Kevin Love and Rubio, whatever, back in the day, or Wiggins and Towns and stuff like that. And there's always kind of been, and I think it's a really cool thing about the fan base, is like really actually trying to figure that out. Like who could this guy be that is now is getting the chance to play in garbage time or at the end of the season? And, you know, are they, and there's been a lot that didn't materialize into anything. And I think with Naz, it a big part of why it did latch on is because people took to him that way as a complete obscurity very, you know, very early on, but also kind of as you started seeing like the first steps of progression, there was reason to believe like there's at least an athlete in there, like there's a basketball right. player in there. And I think a lot of people kind of at different times through his 5 years like did end up like putting their chips on his number, you know, and then, you know, spin the roulette wheel and here we are. He's the sixth man of the year. And so it's, to me, it's very emblematic of that part of the fan base, which I think is a really big part of the fan base. It's the part of the fan base that survived, you know, these 20 yeah. years, honestly, probably a big part of the listenership of this podcast or for your writing, you know, the people who don't miss stuff, I think are the people who got in on Naz early and in many ways for good reason. I thought it'd be kind of fun. I was just doing this on the plane. Internet wasn't very good, but I got up Naz Reid's basketball reference page. I just started like clicking through it and I'm like, okay, so
yeah.
We both covered this team for 7 years, the entirety of Naz's career. And so we've seen each one of these five teams that Naz has played on. So if you want to just join me in Naz Reid history.
Trip down memory lane. Here
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, it's fun. It. So just like jump in with any random thoughts that yep. that come to mind. But so 2019-20, undrafted free agent, right? He's on the team, plays in his first game on December 8th, 2019. It's garbage time, plays for two and a half minutes, takes two threes, makes one. But then he gets into the rotation basically throughout these whole first 4 years, at least. It was all yeah. tied to like his Carl Hurt, right?
Right.
And so he gets into the rotation just after Christmas, December 28th, in like real minutes, like in the first quarter. And I didn't remember it before, but I was watching a couple clips from it, and he shot 10 threes in that game.
Damn, I'm gonna have to go back and look this up.
I bet you remember it. It was like, it was Brooklyn.
Who'd they play?
They played Brooklyn. Okay. And it was like so Nas playing center. DeAndre Jordan is guarding him, quote unquote. Like, and he just wasn't coming out there because nobody knows. There's no scouting about him.
Right.
And so Nas is just
firing open. Away. Yeah.
He's just open. And
how many did he hit?
Three. So was it like? It wasn't like he was hot, you know, but he kept taking them. But that season, so Nas comes in his rookie year, undrafted free agent, two-way, ends up signing a minimum deal before the season starts. He's the fourth string center on that team. It's Kat, Gorgie, Noah Vonleh.
Noah Vonleh was
in the rotation there.
I remember that.
So for Nas to get even into the rotation, Kat got hurt. Gorgie becomes the starter, and then they eventually, at that point, at Christmas, I mean, Noah Vonleh gets traded a few weeks after this, six weeks or whatever after this, but Nas kind of moves up to the third-string center.
Noah Vonleh was part of the mass exodus at the trade deadline that season. That was when D'Lo came in and Wiggins went out, and
Nas could have been in those trades.
Was Nas' first year. Well, Gerson was the team president at the time, and that was one of the things that he did was he signed Nas, and that was if you go back to kind of my story that I ran last week, one of the parts of it was that Nas was basically like, whoever the first team is that calls me is the team I'm going to sign with, and Minnesota was quick to the trigger on that one. So what if it's another team that calls him first? And, the sliding doors of Naz Reid's career could be very different, if somebody else got on that phone a little faster than the Wolves front office did that particular night.
Right.
Yeah.
There was all those different trades where, like, Gorgie got traded. There was the Hawks deal, a Rockets. Denver.
It was a four-teamer between the Rockets, the Hawks, the Wolves, and Denver. And that trade saw Covington go out, a first round pick come back, plus Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez and Jared Vanderbilt come back to the Wolves. And I think
the Denver part of it. So Vanderbilt comes from Denver in that trade.
Tim Connolly, one of two times trading both Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt in his career. This is the first time he does it. Beasley and Vanderbilt coming here.
But it could have been Nas. It could have, like, Nas going to Nas Denver one. It was Kata Bates Diop who went there. Like, both minimum contract guys like that. It could have been that was
Tim was just setting it up for when he, eventually came to Minnesota. It was chess, not checkers there, Dave.
Eventually,
I'm going to be running
five centers.
Yeah. I'm going to keep him there. I'm going to let him develop there a few more years, and then once he takes over the team, he'll be ready to go.
Oh, it was but so then, like, kind of the mass exodus happens there, and he kind of ends up playing that rookie season. That was the cut short by COVID season. Yeah. Like, they played 64 games, and season ended. They didn't go to the bubble. Year two is also for him is again that season that didn't start till like Christmas of 2020. I guess that would have been
2020. Yeah, December 2020. Yeah. So they draft Ant number one in November of 2020, because the draft got obviously everything got pushed back because of COVID. They draft Ant number one 2020. Jaden was in that draft, and Bulmaro was in that draft as well. And then the season started about 3 to 4 weeks later. It was like right into training camp, right into the season, which is why, like, people were wondering, like, why isn't Anthony Edwards any good? And it was like, well, they didn't have a training camp. Like,
right. He was literally drafted a month ago.
Playing games now.
Yeah.
And so, Nas was a part of that team, which was Ryan's final time as Wolves coach, and Finch gets hired in February.
Yeah.
That season, if I recall, I think it was February.
Yep. It So Nas was the backup center on that team. I kind of forgot that. Like he was playing. He was playing right away. I mean, that was a really bad. That was a really bad team. Ant's rookie season, but it was Cat, Nas, Reed. They had a third center. Can you think of who the third center was on that team? Our listeners.
Well, I remember that was the Ed Davis year.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't it messed up how these things are in our brain?
What's funny about that season is. Never, that was the COVID year, so everything was done via Zoom. So we never met Ed Davis, and I personally still have never met in person Ricky Rubio. Like I have not, because the whole thing was on Zoom.
Yeah,
well, so like, you know, we've told press conferences and interviews via Zoom, and we were shielded away from the players that year.
We were.
So I never had the opportunity to actually meet Ricky Rubio in person, believe it or not.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I remember I met Ant for the first time at some.
Yes. Yeah. Same with us. Like, yeah, we didn't meet Ant and Jaden and everybody for a whole year there.
Yeah. That's what half of this, like, just going through it, I'm like, man, that was a weird time in my life. Like, that was just
weird bizarre. Time in everybody's life.
Yeah. Yeah. But so anyways, he plays. He's backup center that season. He actually started the third game of the year. I'm not sure if Cat got sick or like got COVID or got hurt, but Nas started. First start of his career, they lose by 36 to the Lakers. But for the season, it was a 72 game season because it was again condensed because of COVID. He played in 70 of those 72 games, started 15 games, basically started whenever Cat was out. Overall, second year in the league, undrafted player. Hadn't really totally changed his body yet, but averaged 11-5-1, shot 35% from three there. And then it was his third season, and that was 21-22 season. It was his first season playing for a kind of good team, right? The Wolves end up going 46-36. That's Finch's first full year. They make the playoffs and lose to the Grizzlies in six, as we talked about last week from your story. Nas was not there for game six because Rudy Roundtree, his one of his kind of father figures in his life, ended up passing away. But Nas was obviously on that team, played 77 of the 82 games that season, only started six of them. That was a pretty healthy Cat season. And I feel like that was the first time where we were like, okay, this might be a guy. Like he this might be like a rotation player, a legit bench piece in the NBA. He was doing it on a winning team.
Right.
You know, a team. And it was that like Nas, Torian Prince, Jordan McLaughlin bench group. Remember that? Like Ant would play with them sometimes. Ant
was
a part of it
too. Yeah, yeah. It was like Ant and the bench unit was a thing for a while. I remember that. That was the year because it was like okay. That was the year where you were thinking, okay, they're actually a playoff team. They're actually good now. This is more than just giving, you know, guys like Nas Reed and Jared Vanderbilt minutes.
Yeah.
To just develop them, right? Now they're actually trying to win games, and can they be a part of a winning team? And if I'm not mistaken, I don't have Nas's stats in front of me, but I feel like his numbers and his minutes maybe took a slight hit that year. Like they went down a little bit, maybe. I mean, he played in all those games, but maybe he wasn't playing quite as much.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think his playing time was a little more inconsistent that year just based on, again, the fact that the Wolves were trying to win. So maybe if he didn't have it that night or it was a bad matchup, Finch was maybe more inclined to sit him. Whereas the year before, it's like, well, we're going to lose anyway, so let's just give him, you know, let's give him his usual run. Yeah. But when you're trying to win games, you might find yourself playing less against certain opponents. And I think that was maybe a little difficult for Nas to deal with at the time, the inconsistency in the minutes.
It says on Basketball Reference here, 19.2 minutes per game his second year. And then you were right, his third season dropped down to 15.8. And a part of that is just less games starting. But yeah, it wasn't like, I think in those first 2 years where they're basically tanking, it was like, yeah, we're going to play the 20-year-old backup center gets to play.
Right.
You know, like, and he earned it. I think that's the thing. And when I think about that season, he earned it. He earned the stock. That's when everybody, I think, who was watching was like, okay, I'm intrigued by this guy. He had started to change his body. And really, I think it was the Ant pairing. You know, that would have been Ant's second year. And it was, I think, for Ant, it was helpful to have Nas at center because that was more the type of style of play he was used to playing, AAU and college, a center who ran, you know, and we talked about with Gobert a bunch, and why it was kind of so hard for Ant first season with Gobert is he'd never really played with just like a rim protecting rim roll lob threat, that whole thing. But like Naz Reid is the natural style of center for Anthony Edwards. I think we can make a pretty good argument now that like the best style of center for Ant might actually be a Rudy Gobert rim protector, you know, help him out defensively, those right. sort of things. But yeah, I think that materialized in the 21-22 season that the two of them had something. And then, yeah, Naz was kind of on the rise from there. I think we got two more seasons of Naz Reid. This Naz Reid history lesson is taking a little bit longer than I thought, but I'm gonna grab our first ad break here to let you know that today's show is brought to you by Supreme Lending. And if you're ready for a winning mortgage experience, meet Ben Coulter with the Mortgage Dream Team at Supreme Lending in Edina, Minnesota. With over 20 years in the business, Ben knows how to score big when it comes to mortgage deals. He's a dedicated Timberwolves fan that we talked. We're making this partnership happen that, you know, Ben was at the first game at the Metrodome, first game in franchise history. Is a listener to the podcast, a fan of the Wolves. And I want to help you out if you are in that place in life where you're trying to finance your first home or get a vacation or investment home. He's here to help you make those home ownership dreams a reality. The Mortgage Dream Team, as you can see up on the screen, does offer an 8-day close. They have a deep playbook of options here. 8-day close your loan in as fast as 8 days for a leg up on the competition. A $25,000 close on time guarantee. They guarantee your deal closes on time. And then the Minnesota Housing Program, up to $18,000 in down payment or closing cost assistance. In addition, if you mention the T-Wolves special, you may be eligible for your first year at 1% below your note rate. You can call Ben today at 612-268-5454 or visit twolvesmortgages.com. That's in the show notes. It's up on the screen. You can use the QR code as well. Let Ben and his team help you win your dream home. And then also quickly, today's show is also brought to you by Autograph. They are a new partner for us here for the playoffs. And we're excited about Autograph, and we'd love you to download their app. It's just a place where you're going to see, you know, my podcast, Chris's writing, all the blogs, all everything, kind of all in one place. And it rewards fans for consuming their Wolves content or whatever team you follow, consuming it from their community. There you get points for reading and consuming content through there, and they have a bunch of like promotional things, rewards for that, discounted tickets to NBA playoff games, also exclusive merchandise, memorabilia, those sort of things. You unlock those rewards just by doing the things you're probably already doing. Rating Chris, listening to me here on the podcast. So follow the news on your team, share your favorite content through the app. Just download the Autograph app and the App Store or Google Play Store today. You can use the QR code on the screen, but do use the code DaneMore to let them know that you came from us. Free app for all your Wolves content. That's Autograph. All right, Chris. Let's keep going. This is going through Naz Reid history.
Two more years to go.
It is interesting though. Like when I was sitting there, I'm like, oh man, this is taking weird turns. You know, because it really got weird last season for Naz in particular.
Yeah. Here's another moment where, you know, we mentioned the mass trades before COVID. Now here's another moment where a lot of players go out in the Rudy Gobert trade, and it could have been Naz as a part of that, but they held him out of it, you know? And especially when you easily could have said, well, we have Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns. We don't need Naz Reid anymore. Like, we have two centers. Where's Naz going to fit into this picture? But they kept him. They didn't want to trade him. They wanted to keep him out of it. Him and Jaden, they wanted out of that trade. And they kept him, and I think it confused Naz, and, you know, he was very much like, okay, well, they want me, that's good, but where am I going to fit in this
and he picture? DNPs game one.
Right, and he starts out not playing. So, like, his worst fears were coming true kind of early in that season, and he's in a contract year, mind you. So, you know, there's probably a lot going on in his head, you know, early in that season when you're in a contract year and all of a sudden you're not playing.
I mean, so, this is 18 months ago.
Yeah.
He has the Luka Garza role. That was his.
So, quite frankly, like, you know, when I was doing the story, kind of got cut out of the story last week. But, you know, Sheila, you know, his Rudy Roundtree's wife, Sheila, basically said that, you know, whatever time he got was basically an audition for another team. It's like, mm-hmm. you have to use it as you have to go out there and do the best you can for however many minutes you play. Mm-hmm. And it's either an audition for another team on a trade or next season in free agency. Yeah. That's how he viewed it. And I wonder what happens if Carl never gets hurt.
I don't think he wins Sixth Man of the Year, not on the Timberwolves.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we are where we are today if Carl did not get hurt last season and Naz had the runway to play 50 games of regular playing time. And in my mind, you know, everybody was in on Naz. You kind of said during that 2 years ago, the Memphis playoff year. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I was wholly impressed by what he did last season when Carl went out. And I was like, okay, they really have something here. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a nice piece before. And like, yeah, rotation guy. It's a great story, you know, everything. But like, in my mind, he went from being like that to like, oh, he could be like a difference maker kind of guy.
Yes.
That's what last year did
for me. It was no longer like hypothetical.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. It was like, okay, this is a winning team. You're playing. The team isn't really losing a beat when you're in, or not a mm-hmm. big beat when, you know, when Kat comes out and Naz replaces him. But it was interesting. Like, I forgot this, but Naz last season almost exclusively played center.
Yeah,
like him and sure. Rudy did not play together,
right?
Yeah, and it was like those were not Naz's role. It was like you get the 18 minutes, whatever that Rudy sits. Mm-hmm. He played 199 minutes next to Gobert, and it was terrible. Like, it was they got outscored by 55 points in the 199 minutes. Those two shared the floor, the worst two-man pairing on the team, and that's just so interesting. In this now, because he wins this award, he's having the season he's having because he works great with Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
Like, he became a stretch four. He now shot over 400 threes this season. Shot 41.4% from three on 408 three-point attempts. Played 917 minutes with Rudy Gobert this year. They won mm-hmm. those minutes by 171 points at a net rating of 9.2, mm-hmm. which was the best on the team outside of Rudy Gobert and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, which was like plus 10-something. But the Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid pairing this season had a defensive rating of 99.4, which, if you don't know what that means, that's just great. That doesn't.
That's really, really good.
And that's a huge sample. It's 917
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge credit to Naz and the way that he reformed his defensive game. The Wolves were on him about at least rebounding better, or at least making a better effort to rebound better during the offseason last season. I know that. And so he really committed to that as well. But yeah, honestly, it's just the way that he's been able to guard on the perimeter. He's quick.
Yep.
And he's been using that to his advantage. You know, it's been great to see his development as all around, offensively and defensively, because I think we all knew the offensive game was there, early on. We weren't as sure about the defense, but he's fit right on it. Absolutely, 100%. And I totally agree with that. I think that was probably the difference in some voters' minds. The team success of Minnesota playing a part of it, his late surge, I think helped in Monk not playing mm-hmm. the last, you know, month and a half, whatever it was that he was out. All that kind of combined, I think, to really, you know, Naz edges out Monk by literally two votes.
Yeah, that was crazy. I just kind of like, I just didn't watch any games last night or any, like, wasn't watching when it happened. So I didn't even mm-hmm. see like the voting stuff until today, but that was close.
That's about as close as I've been monitoring these for like 6 years now, and I voted 1 year. And that's as close as I've ever seen any race. like two first place votes were the difference. That's it. Like, that is such a razor thin margin. I joked on Twitter that you know, the day Nas had like 31 in that Lakers game and Bill Simmons was sitting courtside, and Bill Simmons is an awards voter. I mean, you just wonder, like, man, did that like have an impact on like whether it was Bill Simmons or anybody else who's a voter who was watching that game that day? Because I think it was an NBA TV game.
Yep.
Like, did they watch the game and say, hey, Nas Reed, holy shit.
Well,
like,
I mean, that it is where he kind of earned it, was in that stretch. I mean, the rest. So Cat gets hurt game 62, or he's out for game 63 to game 80. Cat misses those 18 games. Which this 31-point game against the Lakers happens in the middle of,
right?
At some point there, but that's where he won it, right? He won it by being helpful all season, you know, and on both sides of the ball, as we pointed out with those defensive numbers. But he averaged 18-7-2 when Cat was out, shot 43% from three on 7 threes per game. It was like, before that, it was kind of like a cute, like, oh, Nas is going to be on the ballot for sixth man of the year. And then when he just started rolling there and the Wolves as a team not really missing a beat, I think that's where it started becoming deserving. But I just think, like, I don't know, I haven't paid that much attention to sixth man of the year, I guess, in previous seasons, from like really thinking about it from a voting perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all five of those guys who got votes were really good this year. Like, Malik Monk was really good. I probably would have had Norman Powell next, but Bobby Portis was really good.
Yeah.
Bogdanovich had a really good year. I mean, Atlanta wasn't as good as a team, but like watching him and just like his numbers, like this wasn't a somebody has to win sixth man of the year this season,
right?
It was a lot of
good candidates.
It really was. I think he deserves you know, a lot of credit for that. And it's why it's also, you know, I don't begrudge a Kings fan or another NBA voter or award voter to have picked any of those other guys, because it was a really good crop this year.
It was a really competitive ballot. And it's, as someone that has, you know, did the process once upon a time, you never want to like go with the crowd when you're voting. Like, you want to take it, at least when I did it, I took it very seriously. I spent like a whole day on it, on every category. And you try to come up with like, well, what's my criteria going to be on all these awards? How am I going to factor offense, defensive numbers, you know, all that stuff? You think about all that stuff and then you come up with whatever you come up with. And you know, and then, you know, it gets publicly revealed, and sometimes, you know, the voters get clowned on Twitter as a result, because they came up with something that, you know, they have a reasoning for, but it's not the consensus of NBA Twitter. So you get raked over the coals for it.
You opt to not vote, right?
I opt to not vote now. I did it as like a favor the COVID year. I thought like the NBA just kind of needed people, like, because it was COVID. So I did it 1 year. They have
a lot of beat writers.
There's like over 100 people that do it. Like, if you look at the standings, like, of all the awards that come out, there's like over 100 ballots out there, right? It's people who cover the league, whether they're national broadcasters, writers, you know, media, but they're all kind of media personalities in one way, shape, or form. But the reason why I don't vote and other writers don't vote now is because the all NBA stuff and the contracts, you know, like Ant, if he makes all NBA, which it's looking like he's going to, but you know, Anthony Edwards makes what, $40 million more on his next deal.
Yep.
And you have some power in whether or not that happens. That's journalistically a very, kind of murky area, like, and especially because at the end of the day, those ballots get publicly revealed. So the player knows, the team knows whether you voted for them or not. And it's just a very murky area. Yeah.
I've seen a player and voter interaction happen, like, a season later, and the player knew and was, they had a conversation, you know, about it. Yeah. Wasn't happy. I mean, I guess that's kind of all on the side of like, are we doing this the right way? What's the right way to do it? What I do always note from the media side is this is collectively bargained. Like they put this into like,
right,
the players association, chooses this to be the way that the awards are voted. It's not like the media
or how contracts are escalated or not. You know, this is the mark. The All NBA is the marker for doing so. So
I mean,
it's very strange. It's why I don't vote. Yeah.
It's a flawed process. And I don't think, in my opinion, that beat writers should do it.
There's got to be a better way. Maybe a media, like with All-Star voting, like media is a part of it, but it's not the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
Important. One, it's important from a monetary standpoint. It's an important from like a historical reference standpoint. And and what we can talk about from covering a team every single day is it's extremely difficult to stay up to date with the other 29 teams. It's particularly like in the Eastern Conference, you know, we only see the Hawks twice a year, right? In person. And then it's kind of like, you just have to like take on some extra time to be able to like stay up to date with who's second team all defense or second team all rookie. Like I should not be voting on that because I am watching the Timberwolves, you know. It's a funky thing. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure some people will, get raked over the coals on social media for the things they end up picking. It's just it's a bizarre process. But Nas won.
It's good for the Wolves fans. Don't have to rake any voters over the coals. He won. Be happy, you know.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure, you know, I don't know, like, will Jaden get all defense? I think Rudy will get defensive player of the year.
Ant will get all NBA. I think if you're predicting these things, Ant will be all NBA, probably second team. Rudy's going to be defensive player of the year. I think the questions, Finch is probably going to finish third for coach of the year, I'm guessing. And then I think the other remaining question is, does Jaden McDaniels sneak in on the second team? I think all defense. Yeah. I think he has a shot at, because I think people might just go like, oh, Minnesota best defense in the league. Okay. I'll vote for Rudy and Jaden. But
we'll see. Even though you would like maybe argue like in a vacuum, Jaden last season defensively might've, not that he's having like a bad defensive season this year, but it's like if he
I don't think people were paying that much attention to the night by night,
bingo.
Jaden McDaniels. Your point, right?
Yes.
People were not paying attention to the up and down year that Jaden McDaniels kind of had this year. Right. They'll just look at the fact that the Timberwolves have the number one defense. Rudy's defensive player of the year, and Jaden McDaniels. I hear he's pretty good at defense too, so he must have had something to do with this as well. So check him off on maybe the second team or something like that. That could very easily be how it happens.
Today's show is brought to you by Unified Healing. That's UNIFYD Healing. And whether you're a world-class athlete or just have an everyday 9-to-5, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. We see that all the time in basketball. You got to be healthy physically to win, but players are also at their best when their mental well-being is at its best. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the show. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Minnesota or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/Dane Moore to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/Dane Moore. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Today's show is brought to you by the Game Time app, and I am just glad selfishly that the Game Time app provides an option that's simple for tickets. I remember about a year ago going to a concert at First Ave where I had used a different ticketing platform for tickets, and I got to the concert, showing them my phone, all these different things. It just didn't work. I had to go home and literally print out the tickets and come back. It was ridiculous, and we missed part of the concert. You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. Since that experience, I've used the Game Time app for a handful of concerts and a bunch of Twins games last summer. It's just super easy, seamless. I live a couple blocks from Target Field where the Twins play and have literally purchased tickets on my walk, on the Game Time app, over to the stadium, all on my phone, and got in no problem. There's concerts coming up in Minneapolis. Chris Stapleton and Fall Out Boy are both in Minneapolis this week. And I know I recently purchased Blink-182 tickets for August on the Game Time app. And it was simple and straightforward with a lowest price guarantee, which guarantees you the lowest price or a credit for 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code DANEMORE for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DANEMORE for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Today's show is brought to you by AG1, and I've been taking AG1 mixed in with water every morning for the last 2 months, and I've noticed it just starts my day off on the right note. When I take AG1 in the morning, I never have that hungry morning where I feel like I need to eat at like 10:30 a.m. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I also just had more energy that sustained through the day, kind of a relaxed energy, not like shaky, too much coffee energy. And that's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only do I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because it is formulated based on the latest science and maintains high quality standards. Even Kyle started drinking AG1 every morning. He tells me he also was feeling that energy in the morning. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. That's drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. Check it out. Today's show is brought to you by Dewar Jeans, D-U-E-R, and you know you have some items in your closet that you always reach for, that old comfortable sweatshirt, that shirt that just fits right. And honestly, for me, my Dewar Jeans have really become the pants version of that in my closet. They're my go-to. I wore my black performance denim jeans to the live show we did last week. I wear them to games all the time, and I even just wear them around my house because they're comfortable. I feel like Dewar denim is the perfect mix of comfort, style, and stretch. I wear one of my Dewar jeans almost every single day. Dewar makes stretch performance denim and lifestyle apparel for men and women with elevated styles that stand apart and are made to last. Plus, Dewar is committed to sustainability. They use materials like plants and recycled plastic to create the fabric. Trust me, you'll be reaching for your Dewar jeans again and again. Order yours today. Check out Dewar's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or you can shop online at shopdewar.com/Dane Moore. Right now, my listeners get 20% off site-wide when you use my exclusive URL, shopdewar.com/Dane Moore. This is an amazing deal. Don't wait to get 20% off. Go now to shopdewar.com/Dane Moore.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris, let's get back to Nas a little bit here. In the sense of the series, he obviously great season, deserving Sixth Man of the Year. Hasn't been really good in games one and two of Wolves Suns. He's only played 36 total minutes in those two games, 18 a game, only has 17 total points, 2 for 9 from deep. He only has 4 rebounds in the two games. I remember watching it back. Nurkic got a lot of offensive rebounds over him. What are we looking for from Nas in the rest of this series? Is this a bad Nas matchup?
If it's kind of a bad Cat matchup, then maybe it's a bad Nas matchup. But honestly, I think part of the issue, or not the issue, but some of this is the combo of Ant, Jaden, and Nikhil is just on fire in this series. Like, plus 40 over two games and what was it, 35-ish minutes or so, whatever that number is. Like, when those three guys are on the floor with Rudy manning the rim, like, that's been the gold for the Wolves in this series.
It's like, such like a perfect way to match up.
Exactly. They could switch off of the Phoenix's big three, you know, especially with Grayson Allen out. The Wolves don't really have to worry about kind of other shooters beating them. So, you know, if like they put Rudy in an action, you know, with one of those guys, like Rudy can maybe hedge out a little bit and then they can recover and you know, the same guys guarding them after the action's done. Like
I think that part right there is huge. Know? It's like Rudy having a trust that he can play the action, however that action needs to be played. Kind of regardless of who he's in it with defensively, if it's Jaden on the ball or Nikhil, because he knows the other guys around him are more than competent too. Because if it is him and Nikhil guarding this, well, okay, here's Jaden McDaniels, the low man. You know, like that's there. He never has to worry about there really being a weak link out there with him. You know what I'm saying? And I think that to the whole Rudy defending in space, getting out, all that sort of thing, like, Rudy having a piece about that in his mind mentally is, I think, is massive in the series. I think it's why he's having so much success defensively, playing in an array of different ways. But it is, speaking of six men, like with Nas and being the sixth man of the year, not really delivering in the sixth man role in games one and two, even though the Wolves are playing well, like, pretty cool that the Wolves have a second, like, real high quality sixth man. Option in Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Is like going through some of those numbers when I was going through the history stuff, and I was looking up like the Rudy and Nas minutes together and stuff. Like, even last year, man, a bunch of the best lineup combinations had Nikhil Alexander-Walker in it. Like, this isn't new. This isn't new. Like, he's and then obviously he had an even better year this season. But I mean, that's pretty cool that your sixth man of the year cannot be. I'm not like Nas isn't playing like terrible, but like someone else is stepping up on the bench in a real major way. It's kind of cool that the sixth man of the year is coming from probably the best bench in the NBA, you know, it's like kind of a group award in a way, much like Jaden getting all defense for the Wolves being the best defensive team in the league like that. Something cool about that.
This is, we talked about it all year. This is one of their strengths as a team. And, you know, when you look down the road through luxury tax hell, are they going to be able to be as deep of a team this year or in future years as they are this year? But for right now, like, to have, you know, Kyle's been hurt, but to have like seven, let's say, starting caliber players to be able to roll out, or seven guys, you know, like Nas, that you can give major minutes to, and not just shorten their minutes because it's the playoffs, but Nikhil Alexander-Walker is playing, what, 30-plus minutes in each of these two games here?
Yeah, about 30,
You know, like, that's a huge luxury to have in the playoffs, because most teams around the NBA are cutting their rotations, and they're cutting minutes for even their, like, seventh guy or eighth guy, and the Wolves are actually expanding the minutes of one of their guys coming off the bench at this time of year.
Yeah, that's probably part of why Nas hasn't played as well either. They've been leaning into Nikhil. I mean, they've been leaning more into wings and one big.
That three met, that combo in the second half of these games when they've been on the floor defensively together is just a thing of beauty to watch. It really is. It's fun. It's been, it absolutely is. And I think that is the unit that is just crushing the soul of the Suns in this series, is they don't have an answer. Like, the whole thing about Phoenix with the big three is you're trying to make the math work, right? It's like most teams are only going to have one, maybe two decent perimeter defenders to guard three guys, right? So what are you going to do as a team? And then maybe not have the quality of rim protector that the Wolves have, you know, behind them. So, but when you throw three guys out there that are able to guard those three, and they're all kind of heavy isolation players to begin with, man, does that gum up the works for Phoenix offensively?
And even like that Kyle Anderson doesn't need to play.
Yeah.
You know, like, just from a defensive perspective, like, they're kind of like, we're kind of good. Like, and Kyle Anderson in any other series against the Phoenix Suns on any other team would be getting a lot of minutes to guard Kevin Durant. Like, that would, you know, if the Suns played the Thunder and Kyle Anderson was on the Thunder, Kyle Anderson would be playing a ton. And the Wolves have this luxury of being like, well, with Kyle, you know, that might hurt us offensively. And he's hurt, you know, that's a factor here too. But like, even once Kyle Anderson is back, like, he doesn't have to play because the Wolves have those perimeter defenders. And then Nas played 16 minutes last game. Like, you know, there's just, you would probably rather give him eight more minutes or whatever than, you know, jam Kyle into the rotation there. So we are seeing the depth of this group, even if Nas isn't individually, you know, playing super well. I think, like, if they do get on from this, the Denver series would be really good for Nas.
100%. They're gonna need all hands on deck to guard Jokic in that series, whether it's Carl, whether it's Nas, whether it's Kyle, and sometimes maybe Rudy straight up. Like, they're gonna need all four of those guys to tangle with Jokic. Should that be a second round match? Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. But yeah, that would be more of a Nas series, I think, for sure.
If the Wolves do get to Denver, that they can, it's a cool thing to the bench point that they can shape shift in that way. They've had to slide down to playing four wings more often to against Denver. They're going to want to play two bigs all the time, and they can, you know. Another testament to just this roster construction right now. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do think a Nas offensive game is coming in this series. I this is just who he's been all year. I mean, he might go quiet for a game or two, but he always pops back up. He always has one of those outbursts where you're going to see like 15 points in the first half or something like that. I feel like one of those moments is coming.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to come from the pop and the shooting the three.
Yeah.
Like, I've just, when I was watching it back, I obviously kind of knew, like, okay, Nas has kind of struggled in these first two games. And we're so used to seeing him, like, when he's attacked the basket this year, it's been against backup fives. Well, now it's like Royce O'Neal on him, Kevin Durant, like guys who can move their feet with him against the drives. Like, I don't think we will get a big Nas like attacking the basket game in this, because to Phoenix's credit, they got a bunch of those type of guys, right? Maybe if he gets Eubanks on him or whatever for some sort of stretch, I could see Nas hurting that. But I think that's the thing. It's like get to that like pick and pop action where Nas just like peels out of it and is open all the time. Take those decisively still, and then I think if he just like turns the dial up more towards shooting rather than attacking, kind of like we've said with Carl a lot as well in the series, just for the four, if you can do that in the series, I just think that's kind of what the Phoenix matchup demands. What are you expecting in game three here? Obviously vibes are high, 2-0 headed to Phoenix, but wouldn't be the first time that if a team got up 2-0 convincingly and came back home 2-2. It doesn't really feel like that. It feels like the Wolves have a lot of answers here. But, what are you just thinking about for tomorrow?
Wolves are firmly in control of this series, I think, because of just how the first two games played out. Phoenix had two off days to come up with adjustments. They came up with essentially nothing. And Grayson Allen got even more injured. Mm-hmm. Have not seen the injury report from them. To
see if I saw... Jace retweeted one of the Suns guys that he's like he was a partial participant and looks like he has a chance at playing. I think he's going to be one of those like I'm playing through a sprained ankle if I play sort of situation. Yeah. But seems like a pretty good possibility that he at least tries to give it a go like he did in game two. But that's big, right?
Like, them having him. Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that I think, and I kind of wrote about this the other day, was Finch alluded to this in his post-game presser the other night, which was that the defense that they're playing now is very, very much mirrors how they started the season, right? You remember that homestand in November when they beat Denver and they beat Boston? Yep. And it was like, oh, wow, these guys might actually be really good. That was the first, that was the first clue that we had that this was maybe a different team than years past. They're playing defense like that. Like that, with that sort of energy, with that sort of tenacity, the wear and tear of this schedule. And this is why I always wondered about this as the season went on. I think the wear and tear of the schedule just prevents you from getting to that level on a night in, night out basis. Now they were the number one defense in the league by a wide margin.
But they were not the same defensive team in January that they were in November.
Or at least they couldn't sustain those highs.
Yes.
On a nightly basis that they were in November, but the playoff schedule just by its nature, there's no back-to-backs. Mm-hmm. The travel is, as we get deeper into the series here, the time between games is going to shorten, but there's always going to be at least one off day. The travel isn't as crazy. Mm-hmm. And you have time to rest and recuperate. And they had a whole week at home to practice, rest. Yep. And they had another 2 days to rest, recuperate, practice. Mm-hmm. Now they've had another 2 days, traveling down to Phoenix. I just think that with the ability to rest and recuperate, this defense is able to operate at its peak powers. Whereas if you're playing a 3-4 situation, 3-game-4-night situation in the middle of the regular season, and all of that is travel as well.
Yeah.
Let's say you're playing in three different cities in four nights. It has a little wear and tear on your body, especially with the way that they play defense. Like, you see how physically demanding it is the way that they play defense, and that Phoenix just can't keep up with it in the first two games. As long as they can maintain that level of focus and intensity on defense, that's going to travel to Phoenix. And I think they have just as good a chance of winning these games as they did of the first two at this point. I'm just in my mind, I'm expecting, you know, maybe there's a game where they let up a little bit. Maybe, you know, if they win game three, game four is a bit of a letdown. And then I'm expecting them to win at least one game here in Phoenix. I really am.
Maybe to your broader point here, it's like maybe it's game five or game six that the defense doesn't show up.
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
when the cycle of the series starts to get a little quicker, because we've had these two off days. You know, we had a week before game one, two off days before game two, two before game three. Now we're going to start to get a little more sped up. And can they maintain that as the series goes on? I think they can.
Well, don't you think Phoenix is just going to start playing faster? It just feels like that's like it. Got to run. Got to keep the Wolves out of their half-court defense as much as possible. Go, go, go. I mean, I thought they'd go to the no center look more in game two, and they didn't go to it at all. I do think whether that ends up being out of desperation or whatever, like I think they pull that at some point, and they just go, let's just see. Let's see if they can keep up with us. Will they leave, you know, Kat and Rudy both out there while we go that way? Like, I do think it is going to be, the series is going to become increasingly taxing for the Wolves, provided Phoenix doesn't just crumble, which, you know, you're down 2-0. That's like a possibility too. Like if Phoenix lays in it, like I think tomorrow's actually kind of big. Like if you can take advantage of that, obviously, and get up 3-0, then the rest of it kind of becomes irrelevant. You got to win one of the next four. I think it's important because I think they, much like the regular season, I don't think the defense will have the same level of teeth that it has in the first two games.
It's something that I am concerned about as well as a series goes on and as the playoffs go on.
Yeah.
That they're going to be able to maintain just what they did in games one of two of this series.
It's just staying attached stuff, man. It's tough. Yeah. And you're getting hit on screen. You're staying attached. You're getting hit. Like, that's hard.
But I think it's a little easier, and I'll say it's a little easier in this series because you're not asking Carl and Nas to do it as much, and you have Nikhil, who is built for this, to do it. So the fact that this is a Nikhil series and he's conditioned and ready and wants to be that kind of player, I think does play into their hands a little bit.
I think that's why we keep seeing Nikhil play a ton.
Because
maybe Phoenix does start trying to target that. All right, who is Nas guarding? Who is Kat guarding here?
And listen, Finch is not afraid. I think we've seen in these two games, he is not afraid to sit Carl for extended periods of time if Nikhil's out there and it's working. And so Phoenix cannot pick on Carl in any way, shape, or form. Yep. He will sit Carl.
Yeah.
And Nikhil will play more minutes than Carl, foul trouble or not. Nikhil will play those minutes.
Yeah, and it does, from like a Finch standpoint, it's just shaping up very well to be like, hey, Carl, we need your big time next round, you know, because they do. That wouldn't be placating to him. Like,
right.
Carl Anthony Towns, if they get to a Denver series,
becomes a major part. Yes.
He's just the most important piece on the entire team, I think, because he could really swing it, you know, to make their defense work against Nikola Jokic. It requires Kat guarding him. It just does. And he's, just from a matchup standpoint, a lot more important in that series than he is in this series here. And maybe what kind of goes against the travel and fatigue point of this is, like, Carl might, with more time, more rounds, more games, might be settling more into physically just comfort and those sort of things. Like, he is still coming back from an injury. Like, he's not shooting it well. I feel like that's like the perfect example of being like, yeah, Carl's just not all the way
not comfortable in a rhythm yet.
He's not. And like, that rhythm will come back at some point, at least, you know, from an offense, just making and taking and being better offensively. Like, that's coming too. Maybe in that counteracts some of the,
But also, you know, to your point, Anthony Edwards had his worst game of, you know, might be his worst game of the series just from a shooting standpoint in game two. I don't know that we're going to see if we see maybe we get you get one more game like that, but I tend to think he's going to be more on than off,
right,
shooting wise the rest of this series. So
well, and you if know, you're that, Phoenix, that, you gotta start asking yourself, do we continue to guard him this way?
Right.
Maybe an adjustment is, as weird as it sounds, deprioritizing Anthony Edwards a little bit, like
and maybe coaxing him into taking mid-range shots or because if Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley are going to do what they did in game two because they're open because you're doubling Ant, then the Wolves have shown that they can beat the other guys can beat you
exactly
and
Nas and Kat haven't even done that yet, so right. It's like even if Conley and McDaniels have a bad game, mm-hmm. like Kat and Nas could step up and have their first really
that's what I'm saying. Nas like, could hit three threes or something like that, you know, in the first stint on the floor. So I just think we're talking through it, and even if the defense lags a little bit, like they still have other levers that they can pull to win these games. Phoenix doesn't have a ton of levers that it can pull.
It doesn't feel like it.
Especially if Grayson Allen is going to be either out or 50% of what he normally is and is maybe an easier cover than he would otherwise be.
I feel like their lever is let's make more threes.
To your point about Ant, their lever is force turnovers, get out in transition. Yeah. That is their lever. That's how they beat the Wolves during the regular season. That is about right now, in my mind, the only way they can beat the Wolves is if the Wolves beat themselves by turning the ball over. As long as the Wolves don't turn the ball over, they're fine, which is exactly what happened in game two. Ant didn't shoot it well, but he didn't turn it over.
Yep.
He just made the simple passes and the simple plays, and they did just fine as a result of that.
It's the single biggest thing of if when we're at the game tomorrow, and if I have the thought of, oh, they might lose this one, it will be so tied to Ant and what he's doing from a playmaking versus scoring versus how much he's turning it over standpoint. And obviously that was the script in the regular season. Turned it over a bunch and they lost because Phoenix got out and ran and all that. And I've said it a couple times already this week, just major credit to Ant, like listening, like, and having the discipline even throughout that game two, where like he stayed pretty disciplined with it, even though they were down like 8 in the second quarter, you know, and Ant kept getting off of it. And so
it was a very mature performance from him.
Yeah.
And I think a good sign of growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Chris. Well, this was fun. Talked a little bit about the series too, Nas, Reed and all.
You know, we got to see what the Vikings are going to do with their draft pick here, even though I'm not a Vikings fan, but let's finally end this already and figure out what the hell the Vikings are going to do with their two first round picks here. Are they moving up? Are they not? Are they taking a quarterback? Are they not? God, we'll find out in a little bit here.
We'll turn on the TV.
Yeah.
I appreciate you doing it, man. For listeners, our plan is that Kyle and I are going to do another immediate recap episode on Friday night, right after the game. And that'll come out sometime on Saturday morning. And then we'll have another game here in Phoenix on Sunday. And we'll do another one after that. There won't be any in-between episodes this time because we've got a handful of them in here during the week. But Chris, thank you for coming on. You guys can all follow Chris on Twitter at Christopher Hine. Him and Jerry Zagoda and the Star Tribune all over this series.
Blitzing it.
So. Like half the media section, Star Tribune employees. Like Jerry, Lavelle. Yeah,
Jerry, we had all four columnists at the game the other day. It was fun. Listen,
the Wolves are hot, man. It's great. There's nothing else to cover
here. It's great. Listen, this is what you want. You know, you want to cover teams that are interesting and relevant and that people want to read about. It's great.
Absolutely. Do read Chris over at the Star Tribune. And you're following him on Twitter at Christopher Hine. Until Friday night with me and Kyle after the game. He's Chris, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah.